Bet on Bears fans, another edition of the Chicago Bears podcast coming your way. Pat the designer, Tom Waddle.
Where's the makeup person, man? I can't be on any type of video thing with all these divots in my face.
You
don't have a makeup person?
You know, we should get one. I'm not going to lie to you. I got my makeup done for the first time. I did a show over on Stadium, just a quick 10-minute segment. Yeah. And they were like, do you want to get your makeup done?
Hell
and
yeah.
I was like, I've never gotten it done, so yeah. Sure.
Yes.
And like, I sit down. She like puts some light powder or whatever it is on my face.
Yeah.
And then she's like, I'm going to do your eyebrows. I was like, what? She's like, we can't let you go on
it's
TV
like
this.
Man.
It was the best experience of my life.
I say that, but I could just like for the last several years, because in most instances, they've gotten rid of makeup people,
yeah.
You know, with cost cutting things that have occurred over the course of a lot of broadcast entities. I can guarantee you now I've got $100 worth of cosmetics in my bag right now.
Can you just do you know how to just do it for yourself?
Yeah.
You've learned it.
Look at this face.
Do you do a beat face?
Oh, you really? Yeah. Like this is, I don't know if this is, they call this the Ohio heat rash.
Is that what that is?
I call it high blood pressure and, you know, a little bit of a sunburn. But yeah, you can get that. Don't do that, Eric.
You don't need to come in on me. I'm
not going to lie. I can get the bright red tone down.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of sometimes you go too far and everyone in the building knows you've done your own makeup.
Have you ever had a Shannon Sharp moment? Do you remember that? Where there was a new makeup artist at First Take and he was out there looking like Count Dracula a little bit?
I don't remember.
Strong
that.
Eyebrows. I don't know. Eric, I don't know if you can find that picture and throw it on the screen. That was a great time. This is a great way to start the podcast. I feel like it's the epitome of being a Bears fan. You got to throw some makeup on that thing to make it look a little better every now and then.
You've had to. I'm not so sure we're going to have to going forward, but to this point,
yeah.
Yeah.
You had in the training
whole, yeah, a whole lot of base. We needed to rub it all down and then maybe. But I got to tell you, though, Pat, like I'm as optimistic as anybody. But with that said, I'm also kind of, I'm playing the long game.
Yeah.
And I think Ryan Poles has played the long game beautifully, where he's done a lot to improve the overall talent on this roster. But at the same time, he's been fiscally responsible. He's got cash left if he needs it to, you know, get a pass rusher or to add in the offensive line or whatever it is. And he's got a full complement of picks in 2025. So not only has the team improved dramatically over the course of the last 18 months, he's done it in a way in which he hasn't compromised the team either financially or with their draft currency. So now with that said, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not on the 12-win bus right now.
You're not there.
I still like we spend a lot of time talking about the trenches, the games won in the trenches. Well, if you do believe that, and I think that there is a lot of truth to that. You can't look at our trenches right now
and feel great.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, so like I could get itchy and scratchy and a little bit concerned about both sides of the line of scrimmage. But, you know, that's being a little bit too kind of focused in on one thing. Overall, I'm thrilled at the direction they're going.
The one thing Yurko always says is that this team was built backwards, that he went through DBs, he went and got receivers, he got the running back room. But you haven't addressed the offensive line, the defensive line, as much as you would like to.
Which is odd because the GM's a former offensive lineman. I think it's a really good point by Yurko.
And the guys he's picked, let's be real. Like if we're being honest about this, we don't feel great about Nate Davis. Lucas Patrick was a disaster.
Yes, sir.
You had to keep Cody Whitehair around because he was the only competent lineman. But you know, like that's not a great situation to be in. Braxton Jones is okay. He's a fifth-round pick. He's overachieved. I think that that's a good pick. Darnell Wright has been a good pick, at least in his rookie season. We hope that we see that moving forward. It hasn't been this overwhelming success on the offensive line that I think many of us thought we would see.
And I would focus on the interior of the offensive line, which – you know, maybe I'm just an alarmist, but I've always felt that quarterbacks, especially young quarterbacks, are much more affected by pressure that comes from the middle of the line versus the pressure that comes from the perimeter. Yeah. Not that anybody, no quarterback wants to have Myles Garrett, you know, bearing down on them.
Khalil Mack coming off the right side. No, I'm not worried about that.
Right. No, I mean, there's time and place to worry about all of that, but especially for a young quarterback. And I said this, you know, the other day on our show. I'm not worried about Caleb's height. I'm not.
Right.
You know, it's not something that bothers me. But at 6'1", he's not 6'5".
Right.
So as a rookie, my hope is from guard to guard, they're really solid because, as I said, I think young quarterback, I think all quarterbacks, but especially young quarterbacks, are very much affected by pressure that is coming from the interior of the defensive line. And Tevin Jenkins has been fantastic when available. The center position, to your point, I'm a little surprised that it's not a spot that they have, you know, that Ryan hasn't, you know, been able to have more success at. And when Nate Davis is out there, there are moments when Nate's really good.
Yeah.
But again, availability may be your greatest commodity. So Darnell Wright, I think, talking to Olin Krutz one day, he said, look, he loves Darnell Wright. Not to, you know, if I misquote Olin, I may get in trouble. No, I'm joking. I love Olin.
I was going to say, we have seen Olin on the podcast.
I'm saying Olin's a smart. He's got the highest football IQ of any offensive lineman, he and Tom Thayer, that I've ever really seen in terms of analyzing things.
Yeah.
But even Olin said, look, the second year, Darnell Wright was really good as a rookie. The second year is where you kind of take that step into that next group. Like, you're a really good rookie, but you're not going to be a really good rookie in year two because you're no longer a rookie. Right. Do you step into that role of being a guy that is considered as a perennial all-pro player? So, I echo a lot of the stuff that you said, Pat. I think that the offensive line, to me, I saw Pro Football Focus a couple of weeks ago ranked them 11th overall.
I have no answers.
I don't either. And I don't know what they're looking at. But
PFF is so numbers. And this is having you on the podcast. I love this because you got to play the game. You got to see the game. For the people out there that live off of the PFF numbers, how do you also base the eye test into that? Because the eye test last year would tell you Braxton Jones struggled with the bull rush. Yes, there were moments that he was good and solid, but
there a lot of their running success was a byproduct of either a direct product of Justin doing great things with his legs or a byproduct of him being a threat, so the rest of the running game excels.
Exactly. The last year, I think they ranked our center position at middle of the pack. And if you watch the games every day, you would go, these guys can't snap the ball and block. That's the basis of the job. Like, how do you look at the numbers and say this is what the numbers would say, but also bring in the eye test into that where you're like, well, this is what we're actually seeing?
I approach it the same way I approach analytics in baseball. Like, I think it's a useful tool, but I don't think it's the only tool in your toolbox. Like, if you walked in to do a job and all you had was a screwdriver, you're screwed, right?
Yes.
Now, I mean, that
would be a good thing to
literally, because you got a screwdriver. My point is if you're a carpenter and all you have, let's say, is a hammer and you don't have a saw, and look, I think you have to have a full complement of ways to analyze things. I think your eyes are probably the most telling. I think experience will help you as well. And then I think there's a lot of analytics. I just don't know. And I know that, you know, I'm sure that everyone at like Pro Football Focus, everyone's working their ass off.
Yeah.
I get it. I think it's the entity's owned by Chris Collinsworth, who is a fantastic football mind as well as a former fantastic player. I think they hired Paul Anderson at one point to do a lot of their offensive line grading. And Paul was an offensive line coach in the league for a long time. So I think that I just don't know, Pat, honestly, like, do they know, how do they know what the left guard's responsibility is on a certain play? Like, it may be taught one way by the Giants. It may be taught differently by the Jets. Yeah. So I guess I would just say to anybody who's relying solely on grades that come from somewhere like Pro Football Focus, I would say just kind of broaden your evaluation perspective. I think it's a useful tool, but it can't be the only tool.
When we see those numbers come out, people are like, see, I told you he was good. And it's like, yeah, but he was good for this moment on a failed play. Was he the reason that the play didn't fail? Was he the reason that the play did fail? Exactly. You know what I mean? Like, yes, the technique here, whatever it is good. Like, he held for 4 seconds. The quarterback got sacked 6 yards behind the offensive line. Whose fault is that? You know what I mean? Like, that's where I think they struggle with it.
I'm with you there. I will say this, you know, I think there is a chance, there is a good chance that how I feel about this offensive line could improve dramatically pretty quickly as well. If Tevin Jenkins in a contract year is able to stay on the field for 17 games, because as I said, when he does play, he's a difference maker. If somehow, some way they solve their center position. If Nate Davis plays like the accomplished veteran for 17 games that we all think if he's out there, he can play like, if Darnell Wright takes another step, if Braxton Jones, you know, is a better player in year three than he was in his first 2 years. And if you get a quarterback, even though he's a rookie, but that plays with a little more feel and plays with, you know, just a better understanding and more efficiency in the pocket. Because I think there were times last year in the last couple of years where Justin put some of his offensive linemen on an island based on how he would maneuver in the pocket.
Right.
And I think if you can clean up some of that, the offensive linemen will be the direct beneficiaries of something, you know, that is improved in that manner. So I think there's a really good, I don't think they're anywhere close to 11 with Pro Football Focus. And in fact, I said, like, I'm very optimistic, but I do have questions at the line of scrimmage. I don't think it's being too harsh to say both their offensive and defensive line are bottom half of the league at this moment. 100%. But as I said, I think the offensive line, if some of the things I mentioned comes to fruition, then they'll be, you know, they can be a top 15 offensive line, hopefully closer to a top 10 offensive line if all of those things come into place.
What's always scary is when you get to a point where you say, if what's happened in history doesn't happen again, then I can see that number being the case, right? For me, can the Bears be a top 15 offensive line? Sure. But you just listed all the ifs on that offensive line. That's a lot of freaking ifs. And by the way, your center position, the biggest if on this line to me, Ryan Bates has played 150 snaps at center in his entire career.
Right.
If Ryan Bates can play center,
well, the kid
you're a top 11. You know what I mean? Yeah. There's so many ifs.
The kid from the Rams played every game, but I believe not a kid, he's been in the league a while, but I don't think he was evaluated in the top half. So there's just some questions. Being up there for a couple of the OTAs, I saw, you know, they were rotating guys. And I just hope, again, having never played a snap of offensive line, but I just hope they find a solution early.
Yeah.
And then they stick with it. Because again, for a rookie quarterback, the last thing there were times last year where Justin was behind the eight ball as soon as the ball was snapped because it was careening off of his shins.
He was playing Javi Baez out there trying to keep the ball from getting through the middle of the infield.
You can't have that. And again, you know, Caleb Williams is going to be asked to do something he hasn't done. He didn't do it at Oklahoma. He didn't do it at USC, and that's play from under center.
This is true.
Like Shane Waldron's offense, you're going to play from under center quite a bit. And I think that that's a good thing. And I think that Caleb will adjust to it quickly. I don't think it's something he's going to struggle with. I just hope that they help him with it by having the center position, you know, pretty much solidified early in the season.
We saw a lot of additions to this team this offseason, the biggest ones being the wide receiver room right now. I mean, you add Roma Dunze in. Through the draft, you add Keenan Allen and via trading that fourth round pick, which I think both moves are solid moves. But again, right, maybe you're doing this a little bit backwards, going receiver versus offensive line. As the receivers on this team, how do you help your quarterback if those offensive line issues are there?
Well, I think you got to be where you're supposed to be. I think that's what's most important. Look, I'm with you. Maybe they engineered this thing backwards. I think it's a valid point, or it's, you know, it's a concern. But again, as I said earlier, I think Ryan Poles is playing the long game.
Doesn't mean it can't be successful.
Right. I think the reason they drafted traded for Keenan Allen was so that they would have a consummate Hall of Fame caliber professional in the huddle with your rookie quarterback.
Right.
Like, we're on 3rd and 7. There's one guy in this league that I don't doubt is going to be exactly where he needs to be. Right. And he's going to have the leverage he needs against the cornerback that is on top of him. And that's Keenan Allen. He's as smooth and silky of a wide receiver and an important third down guy as you're going to find in the league, even at the advanced stage that he is in football terms. So I think that, you know, having him in the huddle and knowing that he will be where he needs to be in crucial moments is infinitely advantageous for Caleb. DJ is my favorite player on the team, and I became kind of a sycophant of his watching him in his first OTAs last year.
Yeah,
I mean, he's the first guy on the field. He's the hardest worker, or one of the hardest workers out there. Not to mention, he's the most talented player I think on the team, regardless of position. So, having him out there also helps. And I think Rome is ridiculously mature for his young age. So I think that guys being where they need to be and making plays for your quarterback, I think that's going to help the growth of Caleb. So, I mean, there are going to be some pains, you know, it'll be some growing pains out there. But, I mean, the best way that you can help him along is surround him with quality talent. I think it will take a little bit of time, though, as they try to learn the nuances of everybody's games. You know, there are a lot of new faces.
Right.
Quarterback's new. Gerald Everett's a new tight end.
Yes.
You know, Caleb hasn't worked with Cole Kmet. DeAndre Swift comes in. Keenan Allen comes in. So it may take them a little time to find their rhythm, but this is as talented an offensive huddle from a skill position as I've seen. I think you got to go back, and I'm talking, what was it, Cutler,
Brandon Marshall, Alshon Jeffrey, Martellus Bennett,
and was Matt Forte still there?
Like Matt Forte on the running game.
That's pretty damn electric there as a group. I think this group's got a chance to be every bit as good as them over the course of time, which I think is what's most exciting.
Does it come down to just knowing the playbook like the back of your hand at that point? Because we have, as weird as it sounds, we've seen a team go to the Super Bowl very similar. Not saying the Bears are going to the Super Bowl. Everybody breathe. But we've seen a team go to the Super Bowl built very similarly to what the Bears have done. The Bengals had no offensive line.
Yeah,
no, and they still don't have one, really.
So much so that in his first year,
Joe Burrow got killed out there. And his third year.
Yeah.
But the Bengals, he's not going to last very long. I'm very nervous for Joe Burrow. But we saw them be able to go to the Super Bowl because Joe Burrow always knew where Ja'Marr Chase was going to be. And literally we saw him after games go, sometimes it's just he's down there somewhere.
Yeah.
And being able to throw with anticipation, being able to know, okay, I got DJ Moore down the left side. I know he's going to beat his man. I don't have 3 seconds to put this ball in the air. I got to let it go as soon as I think he's beat his
man. Well, that's part of being a quarterback in this league as well, not just knowing your – you know, the guys that are in your huddle, but if you don't throw with anticipation, you know, you're not going to last long.
Yeah.
I mean, the windows are tighter. The guys that are checking your receivers, tight ends and back are significantly better than the average guy you're facing. I mean, I'm sure there were some good cornerbacks and safeties at Oregon. Well, I'll tell you that that revamped secondary in the Lions is going to be a lot better.
Yeah.
You know, Brian Flores
there's nobody
from Minnesota's,
going to class after.
Yeah, right. Brian Flores is going to have his guys doing things that are a little more intricate than what Oregon State was doing.
Yes.
You know, that Beaver secondary was probably good, but the Vikings are going to be better. So, I mean, I think
– Are you telling me there's no tech majors on the secondary out there?
No, I'm just telling you that this is a different level of talent, you know. But I think that was one of the things that caught my ear when I heard, you know, a while ago, well before the draft. I think it was before the draft. Maybe it was after. I don't know. But DJ was out in L.A. working with Caleb Williams.
Yeah, that was before the draft.
And DJ said, yeah, it's different because the ball – you know, you come out of your break and the ball's already in the air. That's the kind of thing that, you know, you have to be able to do successfully to be an upper echelon quarterback in this league. And you mentioned Joe Burrow. Look, I think when Joe Burrow's 100% healthy, I think he's the second best quarterback in the league behind Patrick Mahomes.
I agree.
I mean, some people may argue and get into a semantics argument, but if he could stay healthy, but you're right. Joe trusts his guys. Joe throws with anticipation and Joe does the type of things that I think that Caleb's capable of doing over the course of the next few years as well.
And the hope is that you're not taking a shot in the ear hole every time like Joe Burrow does, because I mean, like, it does come down to the O-line, but like when I see him and how the Bengals put that team together, it is what I think right now this Bears team, because I'm not uber confident in where the offensive line is. And so I do think there's going to be a lot of this season where I think you may see more of the athlete of Caleb this year, where you didn't have to see a ton of that in college. You don't want to see it, but you may see him have to get out in space and use his legs a little bit more. You may see him have to throw some balls where you're like, I hope he's there when it gets there.
Yeah,
because I'm going to let it go.
I tell you, like, one of the things I kept saying the last few years with Justin was just, I'd rather watch him be more aggressive. And I'm not saying reckless. I'm saying aggressive. And push the ball into spots where the ball is supposed to be. And don't worry about it. If the ball gets knocked down or even if you throw an interception or two over the course of a 17-game season, I'd much rather watch the quarterback. Again, don't be reckless, but be – effectively aggressive. And I think that's what you have to do. I think one of Caleb's biggest adjustments is going to be playing in structure. Mm-hmm. Because, again, he played exclusively out of the shotgun.
Right.
His offensive line at USC was not good. So he was constantly moving and playing on the run. There's only so much of that that you can, unless you're Patrick Mahomes, there's only so much of that that you can do and be really successful at. So I just hope he has the patience to kind of sit in the pocket and not hit the eject button too soon, because it's what he's used to doing, and just be disciplined and take what a defense is willing to give you. Just trust those receivers. You know, you've got guys. So while the protection may not be great, don't be overly anxious about hitting the exit button and getting out. You've got to play in structure ultimately to get to where you need to go.
How much of that aggression is on the coach to allow? Because I think the one thing that we saw was we would see games where Justin would be aggressive and he would just let it fly. And then we'd see a game where, like, Justin got a turnover early and then all of a sudden we're running the football for the next three quarters. You know what I mean? How much of that is on Shane Waldron to say, it's all right if you throw a pick here because we've got a defense that probably can get it back. Don't stop trusting what you're seeing. Don't stop trusting what we've studied.
Yeah. I think it's vital. You're going to make mistakes. Yeah. Famously, Peyton Manning threw, 28 interceptions a year?
Yeah.
I don't want 28 picks. Games play differently a little bit.
14 now touchdowns, 28 picks, I think.
I think it was 27 and 28, wasn't it?
Was it that close?
I think it was closer to 1-1 to 1-2. I may be wrong. Yes. But he also probably set the interception record as well.
26 touchdowns, 28 picks.
See, my memory sucks, but stuff like that, you know, every now and again I can remember stuff. I think it's really important for Shane Waldron to, you know, think about also, I keep harping on this, but think about what Caleb is having to do in terms of an adjustment.
Yeah.
Played out of the shotgun. That offense that they run, it won't work in the NFL over the course of time. It just won't. I mean, I don't know what you call it. What do they call it?
Air raid? No, yeah, it's not. It was something, whatever it is. There's air raid?
It ain't going to work in the NFL over the course of time.
I don't know if USC's is air raid, but Pat Mahomes was air raid. But yeah.
But think about
just drop back and let it fly.
Yes.
600 yards in a game.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that Patrick Mahomes has done a fantastic job being brought along by Andy Reid, playing on in structure when he needs to, but then also improvising and doing other things as well. So Caleb's going to have to learn. I mean, again, how about just the snap count? Basically at USC, you're standing in shotgun formation. You're looking to the sideline. The play's coming in from the sideline, and you're clapping. Like, what the F? I mean, like, that doesn't happen in the NFL. So I guess
was it like that when you were in college?
No.
Is this a new thing? Because I remember the cards have been a thing for a while.
We didn't have cards either.
No cards.
We had sign, or you know, it was either that or back in the day. I mean, this is way, way back in the day. They used to bring in plays with guards.
Oh,
rotating guards.
Swap the guard.
Yes, left guard. Yes, you'd have you'd start at guard. He'd play the first play, and the second play, the left guard would come in and bring in the next, and then the other guard would bring in the third down play. Oh, yeah. It's crazy. Yeah, that's the way it used to be. Same thing, but you had guards, too.
The guard's got to know the play like the quarterback does.
Oh, yeah. He's got to bring the play in. Like, you see a guard coming in. He's like, oh, shit, I forgot the name of the play. And he'd look over to the sidelines and – but, I guess what I'm trying to get to is Caleb, he's got to call a huddle.
Yes.
Like, this all sounds ridiculous that I'm mentioning it, but it's all legitimate stuff. Call a huddle. Call the play in the huddle.
Right.
Get to the line of scrimmage. Okay. Read what the protection's going to be, and then go through a cadence, a verbal cadence. And I know people are going to sit here and say, well, those are the basics of quarterback play. Not these days.
Yeah.
They are in the NFL, but they're not in college. Remember the college, too. They haven't had the headset where you can call plays.
Which is the dumbest thing still
in the world. It's changing this year.
But what is also hilarious to me is like, so what are they wearing headsets for? Who are they talking to?
To the guys upstairs. Do you know the reason
is it,
why?
Is it just saving to yell at him, like, call a better defense?
He's chewing out Lane Kiffin back in the day, whoever it was. You know the reason why, my understanding is the reason why they couldn't use, like, the walkie-talkies is to do that, you have to manipulate some of the padding inside the helmets. And there was no agreement between the players at the collegiate level and you know, the college football, whatever. There was no agreement there, and it was basically a violation of something. So all you really would have had to have done is get into a room and have the players collectively say, we're fine with placing a transmitter in the helmet, even if you have to move a little pad over here or there. It was a liability issue.
Are you telling me that the NCAA does not do a great job with communication?
That's what I'm telling you.
That is surprising to me.
Right. Breaking news.
Breaking news. You heard it here first. Yeah. Tom Waddle. I think when I look at the transition from college to the NFL, we talked about the struggles. Do you think because of the offensive line that, listen, I know Caleb Williams won't say it, but it was bad. It was really bad that he had in college, that maybe coming into an offensive line that I don't know what it's going to be yet, but I feel like there's going to be a little bit of flux. He'll be able to adjust to that a little bit quicker.
Yeah, because I think he's a mature kid, and I think he's I think he's got a really good feel for the game itself. Yep. And that's why I said there are going to be some things that he's going to have to get adjusted to at the next level. But I think he's football mature. I think he's a really smart kid. I think he's a hard worker. And he's got a lot of talent around him on the flank, which I think will help him quite a bit. But like I said, I mean, there will be some bumps. There's no question. They'll be helped out by the running game as well. I think you have to continue to, you know, focus on running the football. I think he's going to be good early, but I'm not going to sit here and tell you there won't be mistakes. There will be mistakes. I think he's ultra mature coming into the situation. I think he's authentic. I think he's talented, and I think he's got a hunger to be the best player he can be. And I think you put all those things together, and I think there's a really good chance that he has success, and he has success in an early stage.
The biggest question that I've had, because I think that the relationship that Caleb and Rome are going to have is going to get Rome the football. How do you balance all of that out if you're the offensive coordinator? Because I think, right, like coming in, Caleb's got to know if you're good, I'm good. If I'm good, you're good. And we all get paid off.
You know what? I think it's less about trying to get guys theirs and more about identifying mismatches. Mm-hmm. And I think that you're going to see them. You know, I think, you know, if you're usually you kick your third corner inside. Well, if I'm Caleb Williams and I'm Shane Waldron and I see that the third best corner on the Detroit Lions is actually kicked inside on Keenan Allen, a guy who's probably headed to Canton. Well, then I'm going to try to exploit that matchup. And if for whatever reason we're getting the best of that guy or in this situation, so they rotate what they're doing, then I can actually, now I'm going to go to DJ on over here. I think a good offensive coordinator does a really good job trying to create mismatches with play calling. So I think everyone's going to get theirs. And not to mention, I don't think that there is, you know, wide receivers are considered divas collectively. I think there's probably some truth to that. I don't see any diva in DJ Moore. I don't know enough about Keenan other than watching him. Don't believe
he wants his money. I know that.
That's true.
He wants his money, and he deserves his money.
That's true.
Yeah.
But Rome to me is another guy who, like, all you gotta do is listen to him talk, and you know he's mature beyond his years as well, and he'll get acclimated to what's happening. I don't think you're going to see guys in the huddle screaming at each other they didn't get theirs. I just don't. I don't think that's what this offense is going to look like.
Was there a Tom Waddle diva moment when you were in the league?
I couldn't. Half the time I was cleaning up blood or I was trying to catch my breath. I was never screaming to the sideline, give me the ball.
You never came back into the huddle and looked at Jim and just, I'm open. What are you doing? I'm open.
maybe towards, you know, like the third or fourth year in the league. But no, it's funny that you say it. The quarterback has got so much going on.
Yes.
And under a lot of circumstances, like I want to say my first 91, I think Jim was the most sacked quarterback. I love my offensive line guys too. If they heard me say this, he probably kicked my ass. But I think Jim was either one or two in terms of most sacked quarterbacks. Jim had a tendency early in his career too to kind of run into
a sack
or two. But he was one of the toughest guys I've ever been around in my entire life. I'm not surprised at all that he's had success wherever he's gone. But at the end, I want to say at the end of the 91 season, I had both of my shoulders operated on at the same time. I had an inch of my right collarbone cut out, had my left shoulder completely sanded down. Like when I went into to the operating room, there was a plate full of tools. There was a hammer, there was a chisel, and something that looked like a crowbar. And
you sure there was a doctor in there? Was there a doctor or a carpenter?
I was like, what, are you guys fixing a Buick, or are you going to get it to the point where I can get my hands over my head? Because that the second half of the season, I couldn't get my hands really over my head without taking shots. Anyway, the moral of my story was at the end of the year, Jim was the most sacked quarterback in all of the NFL that year. I was in the hospital having both my shoulders operated on. Jim gave every one of his offensive linemen a brand new Rolex, including Frank Kmet, Cole's dad, who was a defensive lineman that I think they turned him over to an offensive lineman. I think Frank got a Rolex too. And I was at Northwestern Memorial Hospital in the hospital for 2 weeks recovering from surgeries. And I didn't get shit from Jim. So
you still looking for it?
Yeah. He won't even take my call anymore. Maybe it's because he knows I'm looking for my watch.
That's what it is. He's the Rolex price.
So I guess
up.
What I'm saying, Pat, is look, I never came back to home. Half the time he was bleeding and they just got, you can't do that. I think, and I, that's what I mean. I don't think that this offensive unit's built that way. I don't think it's their mentality. It doesn't mean that guys like that want the ball, Justin Jefferson wants the ball. Yes. Stephon Diggs wants the ball. I get it. And you want those guys in your huddle. But with a rookie quarterback, I think having Keenan Allen and DJ Moore and a mature rookie in Roma Dunze it's a perfect fit for Caleb.
I'm not going to lie to you. I think the diva narrative needs to be shifted to DBs.
Oh, there's no question.
I think the diva – because let's be real. Like the best wide receivers in the NFL, who's a diva?
Maybe.
Is Tyreek Hill a diva?
Am I allowed to swear?
You can swear.
The DBs are the biggest shit talkers on the planet. Biggest shit talkers on the planet. I tell you another story. I had played against Benny Blades. Benny Blades had me pinned on the ground. And Benny at the his hands in my face mask. And he fish hooks me. And he puts his finger. He got one finger in my mouth trying to rip my mouth out. I think he had his thumb in my nose. And I got up and I bit him. And
makes sense.
He got pissed. And I stood up and I go, I don't know what to tell you. I said, everything on the inside of my face mask is mine. Everything on the outside of it is yours. But this is mine. But I can't even begin to tell you just because of circumstances. I don't want to say too much. But when I got into the league, I was slow.
Yeah.
I was a little different.
Yeah.
Okay. So everybody I stood up at the beginning of it had something to say to me, which was,
you got the stories from it. You got the great stories from it.
But they, and that's what I love about, there are certain guys that can talk it, but can't back it up. I think our guys, whether it's Jalen or it's Tyreek Stevenson or it's Kyler Gordon, I think those guys not only can talk it, but they can back it up. And I think they play with a swagger and a level of accomplishment that goes with that swagger that I think is great.
How they finished last season gave them, to me, the ultimate confidence that you can have as a DB. Tyreek Stevenson, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, before Montez got here, gave up 7 touchdowns.
Oh, yeah, he struggled the first six weeks of the season.
By the end of the season, he had given up 2 more, and he was one of the better shutdown corners that you could have in the league. Like, to say that about a first-year player, right? It's got to build the confidence in him. Jalen Johnson's on the other side. If he can stay healthy this year, you've got Brisk, you've got Gordon, you've got bringing in Bayard to me is a huge upgrade.
I agree. I think he'll be better here than he was with Philly last year. I think
Philly
it's a better match. But Stevenson, sometimes you hit, sometimes you miss with your evaluation of guys. But when I watched Stevenson in training camp last year at the very beginning, I looked at Sylvia, I said, this kid's going to be a hell of a player. He may struggle early. He's going to get penalized a lot because he's big and he's physical.
Yeah.
But when he learns what he can get away with and what he can't get away with, you know, I'm just telling you, when the more physical a corner is, the more difficult it is for a wide receiver, because the last thing you want to do is get mauled at the line of scrimmage. And then you spend so much energy trying to get a release from a big physical corner that it then takes away from the precision of your route. The timing comes off. So, and you could just tell when he learned what he could get away with physically and what he couldn't get away with physically, that's when I think he kind of settled in. He's physical. He's got a lot of confidence, and he got thrown at a ton. I mean, it was baptism, you know,
by fire.
And I think he's showed the elements of good corners. You got to have a thick skin and a short memory. And I thought he was really good the second half of the season. So, I think that the swagger exists with that defense. And Pat, I think that I said this after OTAs, I think this Bears training camp is going to be one of the most entertaining things you could go to, more so than Chicago baseball. That's for damn sure.
That's why people are trying to resell the tickets for $300.
Yes.
I'm so glad that StubHub and them stepped in and took that down. I'm like, you're reselling the free tickets for $300?
Yeah, that's shady business.
That's shady business.
Yeah. Right, but I think that what happens in practice every day is going to be immensely beneficial for Caleb Williams in this offense. There's also, you know, this defense that played exceptionally well last year at the end of the year and then listened to everyone around the NFL universe talk about Caleb and the additions on offense and Keenan Allen and look at this Bears offense. They're like, whoa, wait, we were the strength of this team last year. I think every day in practice, and it's healthy, but there's going to be chirping. There's going to be competition. And I think by the time you get to the opening game of the season, I think there's going to be a certain callus that, and this is a good thing, that Caleb and that whole offense has. You get calloused through camp, not just physically, but I think mentally as well. And you're going to face an aggressive, defense every day that's got a swagger. And I think on Sundays, you're not going to be shocked to see the opponent act and behave and play in a manner in which you're used to every day in practice. And I think it's going to be great for Caleb to face this defense.
Who is it on to set that tone? Because I agree with you. I think that what we saw at OTAs, to me, I was very excited by it, because every time Caleb started to get the best of the defense was like, oh, the kid thinks he can play.
Yeah.
Oh, let's play for real now. Let's go out here and give a little more effort. And you would see the defense win. Caleb would figure something out. The defense would figure him out. But who is it on to set that tone? Because I think last year, my biggest surprise at training camp was in year one of Matt Eberflus. Everyone was sprinting, they're running, they're playing hard, and I get it. It's the end of the bench guys who are trying to make a team, and you saw that play out on the field with the end, and that's why we win three games. But in year two, I swear, I was like, guys are walking off the field. Like, it's quiet here. There's no talking. Defense is kind of chirping, but there's nothing happening here that to me feels like this is a real practice. It feels like this is a formality we have to do before we get to the first game of the season.
I thought the bigger issue for them last year was there was no contact. And I'm sure Yurko has talked that to you about that. And they don't need to do it the way Johnny and I did it back in the day. I mean, we were out there for 3 hours in the morning and 2.5 hours in the afternoon in double sessions. And I think, you know, the teams he played on in Green Bay got it right towards the end, where Holmgren, you know, it was the 49er way was we're not going to be 65 or 70% in week one of the NFL season. We're gonna pace ourselves and we're gonna do it right. I think that they, from my perspective, I don't think they did enough physical stuff, especially in the trenches last year. And I think that Eberflus has talked about it. There's gonna be a lot more competition in training camp this year. And I think it's gonna be a good thing for them. So I would hope that there's a little bit more, you know, physicality that goes on. I just think you be available. It's like I said, DJ is the first guy out there, and I've never seen DJ more miss practice. Now, I'm not up there all the time, but like when other guys and maybe he just stays.
I don't think DJ.
Well, that's the best way to kind of lead, is to be out there and be the hardest worker. As long, think about all of the greatest. I mean, Michael was the hardest worker for the Bulls. Jerry Rice was the hardest worker for the 49ers. Like, when your best players are also your hardest workers, I think it kind of goes hand in hand. And even on OTAs, like, there were a couple of guys that weren't there. Every one of those secondary players was there. Tyreek Stevenson was there. Jalen Johnson signed that contract. Jalen was there every day. So Gordon and Brisker were available. I don't think it's anything that you have to do by being loud or boisterous. They'll play with a swagger. I think the fact that they're out there as a group every day,
you're
competing,
camaraderie.
I think that's what's most important.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to see. I can't wait for training camp to get here. I'm excited. Before we let you go, Waddle, what's the one key the Chicago Bears have to have accomplished by the start of this season to hit the ground running?
By the start of this, well, first of all, you need to be as healthy as humanly possible. I think your quarterback needs to be up to speed. I think that the key to this season, if we get through, you know, weeks 12 through 17, 18, wherever we're at, and you haven't seen significant improvement in quarterback play, I'm going to be disappointed.
Yeah.
Because I think that Caleb has the capacity to be a better player. I think he's got the potential to have better feel at the position than what we've seen the last few years. I think Ryan Poles has done a fantastic job creating an infrastructure that is very quarterback friendly, much more so than what Justin got. Like, Justin was handed a raw deal in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
There's no question this offensive huddle that Caleb will step into is light years better than what Justin found himself in for the majority of his time out there. And it's unfortunate for Justin, but it is very fortunate for Caleb. So with that as a backdrop, if Caleb isn't playing the position with a ton more efficiency, and just overall the quarterback play isn't significantly better, I will be disappointed. So I guess to get to that point, I hope you clean up all of the issues that need to be cleaned up with regard to cadence and huddle management and play calling and all that other stuff. So when you're ready to go, and it won't be perfect, but just be ready for the start of the season. And I think if that's the case, you just watch the progress take place.
I love it. Ladies and gentlemen, the only Chicago Bears wide receiver to openly admit to biting somebody.
I did.
On the podcast.
I did.
Tommy Waddle, appreciate Tommy coming on the show.
Yep.
Hit that like button, subscribe to the page, leave that 5 star. I was forced to. I love it.
I may bite you before you get out of here.
I will keep my fingers out of your mouth if that's the key.
I don't ask much, Pat. Just you put your finger in my mouth, you're going to get bit. I think that's a simple rule of life.
That's standard. Yeah. That's a good rule to have.
Yeah.
Hit that like button, subscribe to the page, leave a 5-star review. Y'all know what they're doing. Drop a bear down in the comments below. Let us know your biggest key that needs to be accomplished by the start of the season for the Bears.
By the way, does your seat sit higher than mine by is that the way it was planned, or is that just me slumping?
I think you're
chair?
Just slouching there, Wads. I'm not going to lie to you.
Right. Pat, this is how Pat stands over his his interview people.
I think you're just slouching a little bit there.
Hey, Wads. Tom, how you doing down there?
I'm definitely not taller than you two, so it's definitely you.
I think my spine's kind of bent over.
When you sit down, you get a few inches of compression.
Yeah, exactly.
Y'all stay safe out there, Chicago. Bear down. One love. Peace.